Well, I don't even know how to start this one, listeners. Welcome to Mars on Life. This is episode 188. This is going to be a little bit of a shorter episode. Right now it's just Andrew and I. And if you can't already tell by the tone of my voice, it's been a pretty rough couple of weeks in general, just trying to digest the news cycle. Ever since I think it was on October 7th, the attack by Hamas on Israel, and then the response after was, I don't know how else to describe it, it was fast and furious, and it was something that thus far has led to thousands of deaths on both sides. I think at this point it's something like 3,400 Palestinians are dead. Yeah, this is the news right now for the whole world, it's been a very touchy subject for everybody who's been following it. I know there's been a lot of people that are very much divided on the matter, even though it's definitely a humanitarian crisis where, well, the reaction stands. I'll say this, it stands in stark contrast to everything we saw happen with Ukraine last year. I'll leave listeners to decide on what I mean by that, but I'm sure you understand what I mean. And yeah, Andrew, how have you been comprehending this before I blather on?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a difficult time, I think, for everybody, no matter what, I guess, I hate to frame it this way, quote unquote, side you're on. I mean, it's a really difficult topic to approach. You know, I think full transparency, I had difficulty trying to learning how to speak publicly about this. I'm sure if you're in an office environment, you've received an email from your bosses talking about the subject. It seems inescapable in any line of work. And I just think at this time, it's really difficult. But at this time, it's just important to remember to pay attention to facts. You know, I don't like to pay attention to what's real and what's not. I think in these times, there's so much misinformation, confusion, cancel culture, all kinds of nasty things that we could probably fill a whole episode talking about. But I think at the end of the day, you just have to be respectful. You have to know what's true and false, or at least do your best judgment to figure that out. And you just need to approach everybody and everything with care, because you don't know if your neighbor, if your coworker has a tie to this. And as you've probably seen your local news, there are local ties to this everywhere. So I think it's really important to just, above all else, be respectful.
I know that that's been a bit of a constant struggle, is following the right news sources, obviously. I mean, even with where I'm at, every now and then it does feel a little strange every now and then when you're following news sources that are intended to be reliable, but they're either assuring you that things are okay or things are right, and you're thinking to yourself, but are they? And then also, you know, you want to stay away from people that are screaming at the top of their lungs, Fox News. It's definitely a really messy time, and you know, I have a larger point about the news coverage of this that I will get to, but I'm not at that point yet, in terms of how I'm feeling. I mean, even just the whole story about the hospital explosion, I know that's been very contested in terms of, you know, who did what. I know that initially some Israeli officials were, there's no other way to really explain it, were boasting about it. And then they quickly deleted those posts saying, oh, I was following a Reuters report. It's not true. And it's like, okay, well, you do have your own intelligence guys that you could be relying upon instead of quote-unquote Reuters. Situations like that, I always will remain skeptical and wait until third parties can look into it. I know Joe Biden's gone over there. I believe at some point while we started recording, I thought this was happening tomorrow night, but he did have a Oval Office address declaring support for Israel and Ukraine, because, you know, we have Ukraine and Russia to remember. I've had a few personal conversations where I have basically just simply said I'm gonna wait until there's either better information or non-biased, authorities looking into it, whether it's the UN, whether it's some humanitarian group. When the crushing reality of all this hit me, I definitely fell into the camp of despair, and to some degree, I still am. And I know online, especially among those that are, pro-Palestinian, it's an argument over, do you fall into grief and despair? Do you give into it? Do you stand against it and say, this is a privilege that I have, and I shouldn't succumb to it. But I think also when the realization of it all hits you, I mean, I'm sorry. It's, for one thing, there is the grief of what happened on October 7th. I mean, it's disgusting. It's the biggest slaughter of Jewish people since the Holocaust. It's a nightmare. And then knowing the response and realizing in a lot of ways it's very much like what we've seen in other parts of the world over the past 30 years. And it's devastating, and especially after COVID, where thousands upon thousands of people were dying every day, and then knowing that a similar situation is unfolding before our eyes, it weighs on you. And it's definitely something that's had to sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Had to sort of I don't know, remeasure, reevaluate. There we go. Reevaluate my matters of principle. And I certainly came away this past weekend feeling more emboldened by those principles, after feeling completely weak. But I mean, for goodness sake, I even had a moment this week when I was interviewing a Jewish pro-Palestinian demonstrator, and I caught myself in my own throat trying to ask a question, when I said, the despair is a real thing right now. I don't know if, has that been something that you felt at all with all that's transpired?
I have been removed from it in business journalism, and I guess, in contrary to your experience, it's also a little disheartening to see how much capitalism doesn't really ca capitalism continues to chug along. And like, I don't want to go on any tangent, but it's just like people. A lot of I think what I've realized, the lesson is that if you're not in like local journalism, if you're not working for like the local paper or reading your local news every day, if you're just in a whole different world, a different mindset, it's there's still unfortunately a lot of people who don't care. And like, I think it's pretty obvious to say you don't have to be Jewish or Muslim to care about this issue, to not want people to die. And I'm glad you mentioned Ukraine earlier, because there's still a war going on there that we're just gonna essentially shove aside for this coverage. The wars should not be competing for coverage. Victims should not be competing for coverage in media, but that's just the game it is. It's sad. But on other hand, yeah, I've just seen in the business world, lots of I hate to use the word standard, but it seems like the standard is to support Israel, and not a lot of Muslim, let alone Palestinian voices in the industry I cover, mortgages, real estate, really speak on this. And you would think they would, because there's so many Arab Americans. I've spoken to Muslim people in the industry. I know there's people out there that care, but I also get the sense that it's difficult for them to speak out, as I'd imagine right now, because of all the hate that's out there, all the nasty stories that I don't even want to give, well, actually, we should talk about it, but there's a lot of nasty stories and violence and really awful people out there who are committing violence in the US because of this. But I also sympathize for those people who really want to speak up but can't, because not only is it, oh, you might lose your job or get suspended, you really might lose your life if you speak on this. I know even back in our backyard in Harvard, there students that spoke against pro-Palestinian Harvard student protesters, if that's the right word to use in this context, protesters got doxxed, and it's just a really nasty game. So, not only is it like, yeah, it's just a nasty game no matter where you turn. So it's disheartening in that sense to see, on one hand, yeah, like nobody speak up, probably out of fear or ignorance. And on the other hand, people that do speak up, really in fear for their well-being.
When a lot of this started, it all, I think it had already begun. Let me look at the calendar. 'Cause in the time since I've had, it started on the 7th. Taylor and I were out of town that weekend. We did our best to sort of just stay away from the internet. And it wasn't really until the 9th that it all started to settle in. Both of us have been distraught by it, but ever since the 9th, which was Indigenous Peoples Day, it was of course also known previously and still known throughout most of the country, including Santa Clarita, Columbus Day. And I thought it was a good time to say, oh, here's some recommended reads for both this particular day, but then also for this particular moment. And I have a few. I admittedly only have a couple books that talk about Palestine, and one of those books is like a compilation of essays and think pieces by a whole variety of people, Edward Said, Norman Finkelstein, yes, of course, Christopher Hitchens. That was actually the last one of his books that I, for the longest time, never really was interested in reading, just because I thought, eh, he only contributed like that much to it. But that being said, the rest of it is electrifying, but also heartbreaking. So there's that, and then two other books that I very well easily recommended. One of them handles more so Israel, but definitely talks about Palestine and Gaza and the West Bank. Operation Shylock by Philip Roth. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the other book about Palestine. The Way to the Spring by Ben Ehrenreich. And then finally, the book that I feel like is, in a lot of ways, almost beyond perfect in a really twisted sense for this moment, but also, again, devastating for this moment, Beyond Belief by Deborah Lipstadt. And it's basically an account on how the American press failed to cover the Holocaust. But it was a similar kind of state of fear. And the fact that we're living through anything like that right about now really disgusts me, and it really makes me. It's reminiscent of what everything I've read about and seen from the early 2000s following 9/11, but it just seems like it's so much worse because of social media and doxing and, the rest of that lot.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think, what is it? Like, we're definitely not, say, like, we don't feel, I don't want to get it into touchy statements here, but like, nobody here is saying like, don't support Israel, like Palestine, like only Palestine. But like, I think there's also the line between that and like Islamophobia, I think, is not so. Am I trying to say that it's not so thin, or it is so thin? Because it is scary to see. Like, even that the other day, I saw a TV at the gym that was like Fox News, and it was on mute, but you could just tell, the cry on saying like, talking about refugees, and like, you knew where this was going. So I think it's also really important to just, and also too, in today's social media age, like, I guess the Gen Z, I'm sure, they're probably vaguely aware of the Islamophobia post 9/11, but I think it's a good reminder to, understand what it is, recognize Islamophobia. So I think it's a good history lesson. And like, I know you just spoke to some books, but like, I'm really wondering if, I feel like I haven't seen like a good, really popular media depiction of this, that like, there was no HBO series 5 years ago that covered this or anything like that. Like, I feel like I can't say like, oh yeah, well, everybody watched that movie or at that documentary. I just feel like when it comes to this, there's not like a really good, reliable like piece of media or like a good kind of look. So, I mean, that's not like a solution to combat this whatsoever, but I really am curious where like Gen Z, how they view this, the people posting on social media. And yeah, social media is just a hotbed of disinformation. So yeah, I just think it recognizing Islamophobia is important and like learning what's a biased source and what isn't.
And I've had at least one moment of needing to unfollow somebody, which I don't know if that's I don't know whether or not that's considered a good thing or a bad thing, that I've really only had one person in this whole nightmare that I've had to just say, you know what? I look at a lot of people's stories, and when I look at yours, not only am I not only, and I won't, certainly won't call this person out, but I will say they are a bit privileged and a bit spoiled, and if that sounds harsh, so be it. But seeing their random responses to what's going on and just the utter tone deafness of it was enough for me to say, you know what, I'm done. It's harmful, and it's very neglectful of the facts. It's not true, so I'm done. And for the most part, I've seen, frankly, a lot of outpouring of support for Palestine, for the people in Gaza. I know this is something that I had written about today. I know Politico, they initially got to the story that a whole bunch of Capitol Hill staffers wrote an open letter to their bosses, basically saying call for a ceasefire. That was something that was circulating. I think since the number of staffers came out, and it's like 400 people. The reason why it's important is that these staffers all claim to be Jewish or Muslim staffers. Otherwise, I mean, the only other thing that I have noticed, particularly on Instagram, which, Twitter I need to go to for work, but when this all started, it was like a cesspool, and it just drove me to absolute misery, to the point of just finally breaking down. And, it was Instagram where I saw a lot of the positive outpouring and whatnot. But one thing that came to my attention today, and it's something that I can't describe how I feel about this other than it certain the fact that it is happening to somebody I know and care about does, I will admit, fill me with a little bit of rage. I do know one Palestinian American who, her and her sister, I knew at our alma mater at CSUN. Two of the smartest and sweetest people I ever knew when I was there. Every time I saw them at any Greek function, they were the nicest, the sweetest, the funniest people that you always wanted to be around. And to this day, like, well, it's a little harder now, but pre-COVID, like, if there was a party or a kickback or whatever, I adored getting to sit with them and talk to them. One of the two sisters, who is more active on social media, finally was like, you know what? I've lost so many followers because I've gone through this personal change in realizing that this situation is clearly not what is being sold to me. And so many of you are telling me it's my family's fault that Hamas exists and threatening me and insulting me. And it drove her to the point of basically saying, you know what? I'm done sharing stuff. I'm done with your direct messages. I will not be answering anybody or anything. So many of you have just shown the utmost inhumanity towards me for even existing. And that's certainly not word for word what she had said, but that's my best paraphrasing of it, and I immediately reached out to her. Thankfully, she did see my message, or I basically told her, like, I'm so terribly sorry this is happening to you. The fact that anyone is doing this to anybody at all is disgraceful, and it's, I mean, we've talked about it so much, and I mean, we've talked about it so much even before this podcast ever existed, how just how terrible people treat each other, and racism is obviously as much a thing now as it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 300 years ago. It doesn't matter. It's the same disgusting beast. But to see it on this one person, it really drove me to a point where, and I still haven't done it, I probably will eventually, but it's now gotten me to a point where, you know, despite the fact that everything that I've shared on my story tells things for what they are, I've not once gotten any, I mean, I've gotten a few responses here and there that are, you know, that they question how I feel on the matter, and I've just tried to tell them this is a disaster and it's heartbreaking and it shouldn't be happening whatsoever. But anybody out there that happens to listen to this show and happens to follow me on Instagram, if you at all have gone out of your way to express any kind of anti-Palestinian or anti-Semitic sentiment towards anybody, and you follow me, quit following me. Unfollow me, because I won't tolerate it. I won't accept anybody that follows me that espouses this kind of drivel, because it's inhuman, it's disgraceful, and it frankly shows that you really need to get your head checked when it comes to how to be a good person, because being hateful on social media will not get you anywhere, despite what certain politicians or pundits might lead you to believe. And it's not something that I tolerate at all. I just simply don't. So if you follow me, and at any point you've questioned somebody's humanity because of the color of their skin or their religious background, give up on me, because I'm giving up on you. To add to that, and then I promise, Andrew, I'll finish my monologue, something else as well, I think, going back to the whole news aspect of all this, I would say our industry has kind of failed in this moment. I think a lot of the coverage has been very abysmal, very misleading, and I think it's also been very, very clearly unaware of events 20 years ago, shall we say. Like, it's, you know, a lot of commentators have said, wow, it's like the lessons of the war in Afghanistan and the lessons that drove us into Iraq were completely ignored. And I feel like there should be a hell of a lot more skepticism. If you can have so much skepticism when the president of the United States is a habitual liar like the previous one, where every breath he takes is a lie, then for goodness sake, use that same skepticism in everything else you do as a journalist. But also don't forget your common humanity, because damn it, I feel like I've seen enough of that already, especially out of what happened in Ukraine. There has been arguably none of that when it comes to what is happening right now. And it breaks my heart, and it infuriates me to no fucking end. And especially after COVID. Like, this is the way we still are towards each other, even after COVID? I know I've said it before. COVID humbled nobody. And we're still willing to blow each other up, despite going through a pandemic. I just wish and wish people out there would be a hell of a lot smarter with their news, and I wish a hell of a lot more people in news would be a hell of a lot smarter.
It can't be said better than that. I mean, you're spot on. It's just a sad reminder of human nature that there's still so many people, so many self-centered, don't take responsibility for their actions, don't realize that their actions have consequences, whether it be media, social media, otherwise. So it's a sad reminder of the human race, I suppose. But Yeah, I think, it's inarguable that there's no place for hate because I'll never be able to wrap my head around the people who maybe literally high five, like mentally high five each other for like, yeah, like I told that person on so like I that is a mindset I will never understand, after 4 years of Trump and after I guess COVID denial overlapped with it as well, but like the most blatant examples of how ridiculous people can be. And I'm still having trouble fathoming how people are reacting at this time. So it's terrible. I think, gosh, I think it's like, do you combat it or do you ignore it? But I think, if you have somebody like that in your life, I think it's, you address it when you can, but it also it's like you also, as you said, like shut it out. It's not good for anybody. Don't give it an audience. Let it die in the dark. I think, if something's not good, you just got to shut it out. So like blocking something on social media, letting some sending a response to somebody, all that's important. But I also know that, there are fears of safety and such. So shutting it out, I think, is a good place to start because unfortunately, there's still too much of it.
Especially if you're in our industry. I don't know. You work harder, I guess. I mean, I felt like I was initially, I don't even know what's the best way to describe it. I felt as though I was initially sort of sectioned off from even getting to report on it. And I think if anything, I've finally reached a point where it's like, you know what? We shouldn't have to wait for this stuff to come to us. You know, if we can bring ourselves to where people are in this moment, then guess what? We're still doing our jobs at the end of the day. And, you know, it's, if anything, it's given me more of a sense of purpose in this moment. Obviously, I'm, in the grand scheme of things, I'll call myself insignificant, but, you know, I'd still rather say I'm doing some good with what I know, and you know, conversations that I've had with folks, let's just say I feel secure in what I do know about the situation, and you know, you go forward with it as humanely and as carefully as you can, and that's something that I do know colleagues of mine, they know well, they know best, and that's pretty much all we can do. So, but overall, listeners, yeah, it's a little bit of a harder time for cracks and jokes and Ben Shapiro's Snow White nonsense, but you know, it's just not really the right time to talk about that kind of stuff. And with outside stuff going on, it's just not the best time to really be yucking things up. Hopefully within the next couple of weeks we'll have more regularly we have our regularly scheduled programming up and running, including some guests, and I'm gonna try and make at least one phone call or two to potentially get a few things squared away going into November, well, in November, that hopefully sets us up for a pretty explosive finale for season four. Yeah, before I sign off, Drew, any final thoughts?
Yes, stay safe, stay informed, recognize hate, recognize misinformation, and continue, well, stay informed, continue to stay informed. Just keep reading, absorb as much as you can, and be an ally.
And one last note that I'll make in reference to our discussion. I'll just recommend readers check out. It's really great. Response, really great article in Dissent magazine by Gabriel Winnett, On Mourning and Statehood, How to Grieve, What Meaning to Give Those Tears is Cruelly a Political Question Whether We Like It or Not. It's a phenomenal read. I know it's been shared around a lot by a lot of labor journalists that I like to follow, but it's definitely well worth a read and well worth checking out. And you know, very quickly I'll just give kind of a bit of a shameless plug for our own show, but if you haven't noticed, we're now 10 episodes in as of recording, 10 episodes in of the Falling Middle cast. I hope everybody's enjoying it. I'm catching up slowly but surely. I'm about close to our first longest episode until we got to later in the series, but so far that one's gotten the most views, and I'm really perplexed given that it's almost 2 hours long. So it's okay, you do you, listeners. Believe me, there's two more coming that are even longer, so get ready. Of course, none of them are beating our episode 100 record of 2 hours, so that's still sacred. Until episode 200, maybe. Probably. We'll see. But anyway, I gave that one little bit of levity. In a lot of ways, that's... Andrew, you probably have known this from me. That's kind of a defense mechanism of mine in the face of, you know, nonsense, stupidity, racism, evil. The thing I resort back to is to just laugh it off. For goodness sake, even in the face of, like, remembering family members that I've lost, it's like, you know, the best thing you could do is laugh thinking about them, or laugh thinking about what they would do in this moment, or what they would say about anything. That was a good sense of consolation last year, when I had a death in the family, and right about now, that's... in a pretty dour episode, that's the most I got to basically say, you know, hey, Sebastian and I were cracking jokes, talking about economics.
No, there's still, you know, all seriousness aside for a second, there's still lots of people and posts and activities that deserve to be dunked on, but, you know, for another time.
Yep. All right, listeners, to echo all of our words, be safe, be smart, and take it easy, disengage from social media if you can. I know I've needed to. It's going to sound corny and cliche, but let's hope for a better tomorrow.
Mars on Life is a podcast co-hosted by Sebastian Shug, Ryan Mancini, Andrew Martinez, and Matt Fernandez. If you like this episode, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite shows, as Mars on Life is available on Anchor, Radio Public, iHeartRadio, Audible, Spotify, and Podchaser. Find us on Instagram at Mars on Life Show to keep up with the latest news, episodes, and gratuitous updates on the Red Planet. Have a question, comment, or request? Email us at marsonlife@gmail.com, and we'll promptly get back to you. This show's artwork, titled Happy Mars, was drawn by Zachary Erberich. Our show's regular intro and outro music is Space Explorers by the one and only Kevin MacLeod. Thank you for listening, and always remember, if you keep going, you'll make it to Mars.